Welcome to Elevate Maryland, a podcast with Maryland focus and Howard County roots. My name's Tom Cole, and I'm here with my guest co-host, Annie Hader Shaw. Annie, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great. I got to walk outside today. It's not as warm as it was last week, but I'll take it. It's fine. I get to walk outside, so that's good.
Good. Yes. And we have all sorts of changes today. First and foremost, I want to acknowledge that our founder, our regular co-host, Candace, cannot be with us today. She's taking a break. Everybody needs a break. We miss her. She's the heart and soul of what we do here at Elevate Maryland. But we're excited about the show that we have, and we're excited to talk to Erica. Then the other thing is that those of you that are watching us on Facebook Live, we are doing this through another platform called Zencastr. Zoom is great for going Facebook Live. It is not great for the actual podcast that I put out onto the internet that I spend a lot of time and effort to make sound nice. And for those of you that choose to listen in the podcast form, I appreciate that. And I know you're probably saying, Tom, you don't always get it right. Well, I know I don't always get it right, but that's a bit because Zoom is not nice to me. So Zencastr now has this platform where we can do the video, where it records it a lot cleaner. And so hopefully, if you are listening, you are finding that the quality is better. And so I'd love to hear that feedback. So that is all of the preamble out of the way. But very important, I want to make sure that we recognize our next business from the third, which is Food Under the Influence. This week's featured business from the third is a Black-owned carryout and delivery food business based out of Laurel. Food Under the Influence is open until 2 a.m. You can find their menu on Instagram and Facebook at food_underTheInfluence. And they are on Twitter at food_influence1. Be sure to support and get some delicious food from Food Under the Influence. Listen, the name sounds fun. Now, you can eat under the influence. Don't drive under the influence. But the name sounds fun. And it's also, you know, sometimes you're out, you're done being out with friends, and you want something to eat, and every place is closed. This place open until 2 a.m. specifically for that demographic of people who are still having fun, that do not have three kids in the house as I do. And so I hope everybody will think of them when it is 1:30 or 1 o'clock in the morning and get some food from them. So thank you to Food Under the Influence and the third for doing what you do, promoting Black women owned businesses. And we'll keep these coming. So Annie, why don't I turn it over to you with that?
Yeah, sure. Of course. So I wanted to, we have Erica Strauss-Chavaria here tonight. She definitely doesn't need an introduction, but we're going to do it anyway.
Second
Erica Strauss-Chavaria teaches Spanish at Wild Lake High School in Howard County. An advocate for racial and social justice, she became a practitioner and trainer of restorative justice in an effort to end the school-to-prison pipeline. She currently keeps a restorative classroom, which I'm sure we'll ask more about later in the show. And Erica is also a board member of organizations like Racial Justice Now and Equity for HOCO. Additionally, she is a National Education Association director representing Maryland, as well as a director for the Maryland State Education Association. Around this time last year, Erica founded Columbia Community Cares, a grassroots group to provide food and other household items for the Howard County community during the COVID crisis. Since its founding, Columbia Community Cares has received food and monetary donations from across the region and has announced their intention to have a permanent brick and mortar space in the future. You may have seen in an article where I believe Chris Van Hollen was also talking about how the great work that you've done. You've done amazing work across the county. And with that, I'd like to welcome Erica to the show. Welcome.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here. Excited to be with you guys tonight.
Yeah, it's great to see you. So I wanted to start by asking you about the current state of need in Howard County. And maybe let's make that broader and start with how things were this time last year, because it has been a whole year. And how have things evolved over the past 12 months?
That's a really good question. What I can tell you is that the need certainly has not diminished in any way, shape, or form. We have seen consistent numbers at our sites through our delivery service. We have not seen the numbers decline at all. In fact, they have increased. We currently have, I would say, around 200 families waiting for deliveries every day on a long list of folks waiting. We get an average, and we always have since the beginning, around 100 people per site per shift. And it, you know, it goes up and down a little bit according to weather, but it's an average. And if you imagine, we were talking about this the other day, that, you know, every one person coming through the line probably represents a family of, you know, at least two or more. So we, you know, we keep track of how many people are coming through our lines, but that's only one in a family. There may be two or three coming through as a group to make sure they can carry more things. But, you know, on average, one person represents more than one person. And so we know that, you know, COVID has definitely not gone away. The need, we still have folks who are unemployed. Hopefully the recent news of the stimulus will help a lot of folks, but we know that people are very behind on rent, on mortgages, on all sorts of bills, and are barely scrapping by at this point. We know that there are a lot of families who don't have access to other social services, who have told us in their own way that, you know, because we don't have certain requirements that other services have, we kind of remove all of those obstacles to access, that they have relied on us to basically survive throughout this pandemic without having jobs. We've seen healthcare needs go up. We've seen just needs all around have really increased over the past year. We are still, you know, and it's bittersweet, right? We are still going hard and strong, right? But at the same time, it is heartbreaking that the need is still so great. And we knew it was this way before COVID, right? Like this, I say this every time, that these needs existed way before COVID. COVID was just an exacerbation of the injustices and the not failures of the system, but the way that the system's designed to work, where some people are below and others get to reap benefits because of their status in a lot of ways. So
that's
what we're seeing.
I think the other piece of that is I know there have been experiments with things like universal basic income, and the easiest part about it is that they just give people that money. It makes it so much easier. And I think we do end up spending a lot more money, taxpayer money, on trying to make sure that the bad actors don't act bad. But I think there's so much need that it outweighs all of that. And that's why I think what you're doing is amazing. It really, you did the right thing. I think you did the greatest thing you could do in a moment of true difficulty in this country.
Thank you.
Yeah. And so I want to pick up off of that if I can, and ask an intentionally, I would say, ignorant question, which is, I think that there, to the common person in Howard County, they would say, all right, we've got the Howard County Food Bank. We have the CARES Act. We have social services. Why was it that an organization like Columbia Community Care was necessary? Not only was it necessary, why was it necessary to be formed in this way at this time to come onto the scene? And this is not pointing fingers or saying that other organizations didn't serve their purpose, but where did this huge, and it was huge, gap come from that you and your organization came in and filled?
That's a very deep and loaded question. And I could literally talk for hours about that question. The first thing I want to say is that, there were many organizations way before Columbia Community Care fighting for justice for folks. And I want to recognize that lots of those organizations are Black and Brown led, that have existed doing this work on the ground for a very long time. And so I want to honor those folks who have been in this struggle, our elders who have been fighting for justice, who have been in this struggle and who have laid the groundwork for any progress that we've made. That being said, I think there is a general lack of, or a general ignorance, I think, unintentionally or intentionally, in Howard County, with what the image is of Howard County and this idea of what Howard County is. And particularly, I think, you know, I live in Columbia. It's the Columbia area for me is where that has my heart and my soul. But I think there's just this idea of Howard County because it has so many national rankings that there's no poverty here. And that's just false. It is actually, if you look at the data, folks who are living above what is considered the poverty level nationwide are still literally below the poverty level and barely able to survive basic needs in Howard County. It is incredibly hard to live in this county. And people want to move here because there are so many wonderful things about this county. We have neighborhood centers. We have village centers. We have amazing parks. We have beautiful, you know, services for people, restaurants, and amazing, just amazing opportunities that do exist in Howard County and in Columbia in general. And we have great schools. And, you know, and for all of, you know, the issues that we have in our school system, we do have good schools, you know, generally, and, you know, according to national standards, I guess, if you want to say it that way. And so people want to move here because they want their families to be able to access the best of what neighborhoods can offer. But that doesn't mean that it comes with, you know, living a smooth existence. You know, we have folks that are living in, so I know that my volunteers who do shopping and delivery have been exposed, many of them for the first time, to certain neighborhoods, certain housing complexes, certain standards of living that are incredibly subpar. And I have had people text me and say, I cannot believe that people have to live in these conditions in Howard County. They had no idea the living conditions of people in this county and what people are subjected to. In order to make sure that they can also be living in a community that has so many benefits. But we are living in a system in Howard County where mainly our Black, Brown, and poor communities do not have any level of ownership of anything here. There are racial inequalities that exist. There are socioeconomic inequalities that exist. There are healthcare inequalities that exist. And whether, you know, the intention of what Columbia was supposed to be, the intention of what Howard County was supposed to be, was a bold and noble idea at the time. The problem is that it didn't account for upward mobility for many people, and it didn't account for what ownership of resources looks like. And right now, we are seeing the same systems that are full of racism and injustice nationwide playing out here in Howard County. The problem is that we have so many people that are blinded because they live or choose to stay in these beautiful upper class, middle class neighborhoods of Howard County and never really see what's actually happening. I live in Wild Lake. I live 20 seconds from the school. I live in the community that I teach in. I live in the community that I grew up in. That was really important to me. I know the struggles of my, you know, what my students go through because I build relationships with them and they trust me and I know what my community really looks like, what it really, really looks like and what some of these neighborhoods and some of these housing complexes really look like. And I think that that's something that more folks need to really, I think there was an eye, this Columbia Community Care really did open the eyes of so many people. You can't ignore it, right? Like you drive by at the time it was Swansfield, I think had the most impact because it was right there. People would drive by Swansfield and see, you know, a mile long of people waiting. But I think that Columbia Community Care, although groups were fighting for so long, and we have these amazing services like the food bank, but there are obstacles to services. People cannot access them for a variety of reasons. Identification is needed. They need to prove their income. They need to, transportation is an issue. Communication is an issue to access to so many services that are wonderful. And we thank them for existing. But I think that's one of the reasons why Columbia Community Care was so necessary at the time. It was an extension of the work that me and so many of my colleagues already do in the community. It's not like this is the first time that my colleagues and I have worked, done community organizing and worked in the community, not necessarily in this way, but it's not like we're first coming in like, oh, wow, look at all of this, you know, this inequality and inequity, what are we going to do? I mean, we've been in this work for so long. We just knew that COVID was going to add an extra layer of hardship that was never seen before to that extent, you know. And so that's why Columbia Community Care came into existence. That's why it was needed this particular time. But I think the thing that is that allows Columbia Community Care to continue in the way that it does is that we really were intentional about removing those barriers to access. And I think that's kind of where we've been able to see our sustainability and the fact that the people that we have working so amazingly are volunteers. A lot of them are educators. A lot of them have already been doing this work for so long. In the community.
And if I could just add one factoid, this isn't a follow-up question as much as a factoid, but Erica made a note early on about how poverty and quality of life is different in Howard County than maybe other places. There's a lot of time and energy spent on MIHU and that moderate income housing unit program and fee in lieu and all of that. Everyone should know that moderate income housing units are available to those making $80,000 a year. $80,000 a year in most other parts of this country would be solidly middle class. In Howard County, that's a subsidized housing unit under the Moderate Income Housing Program. So thank you, Erica. Annie, I'll turn it back to you.
Yeah. No, and actually that relates to my next question, which is, so whenever Howard County goes through one of these economic downturns, we hear stories of people who, you know, we'd normally perceive them as being well off. But they need to utilize philanthropy as well as public assistance. So, I mean, tell me a little bit more about, I know you touched on it a little bit, but just tell me a little bit more about what you've seen in the last 12 months.
I mean, I've definitely seen and heard from families that are, I mean, it's really heartbreaking, but people that say, I'm so embarrassed to even have to reach out, but I've never had to do this before. We saw job loss for people that never expected that they could be in this situation. And who have really struggled and been and are now, you know, seeing themselves in a situation that they never expected, weren't prepared for. And so we see folks who have always had to struggle, who are now just struggling even more, who've been barely making it as they were and are now not making it at all. And so we've seen, you know, a large there's such a variety of demographic that has been affected by this pandemic, by unemployment, by so many things that, you know, it really just exposes that any one of us at any time could be facing levels of hardship, and that we, if you really don't see people struggling as an other, but as a we. Right. That I think is the most important thing. I named it Columbia Community Care for a reason. I always talk to my students. My students are probably so sick and tired of meditation and healing. And we do a lot of mindfulness, and I just want them to feel some sense of like self-care. Right. But we also talk about the fact that self-care is not just about yourself. It's not only you. It's community care. Right. Because if one of us is not well, none of us are well. The strength of the community is based on the fact that all of us have to be okay, and that it's our duty to take care of one another and to make sure that we are all lifted up and that we are all cared for, because anyone at any time could go through something. And so I think, you know, that's something that's really important to remember. And I think that we lose sight of that. And I think that, you know, maybe the pandemic was a wake-up call for so many folks. We've seen such an outpouring of love, of care. People who said, I can't believe what I'm seeing. You know, please take what I can give. We have seen such a level of mutual aid where we have folks who have offered themselves up as volunteers, who also receive from our, you know, who are able to accept donations. But in return, want to give. We have people who have taken, you know, items from our distribution centers and made beautiful meals and brought them back to our sites to give back. We have translators who have helped tremendously. My translators, oh my gosh, I love my translators. They are so valuable. I mean, all of our volunteers are, but I have such a special place in my heart for our translators because it is a long day for them. they do this for free. They are up from 8 o'clock in the morning, making sure that the families who have requested deliveries are receiving them. They, any issue between, you know, any communication that needs to be done between our shoppers who are delivering orders and our families who are receiving deliveries, they are just the, they're our dispatches and our translators, and they are doing such amazing work. And I've had, you know, some of our translators, also have family members or they themselves are struggling. And so we've seen such a level of community care. It really does live up to the name Columbia Community Care. It's such a beautiful part of this journey that we've
been. And Erica, I want to pick up off of that because I think that's something that many people listening to this, watching this might not appreciate about what you're doing if they haven't been to your website. Yeah. Your website is one of the few, service organizations in Howard County where it is bilingual on its face, where the, it is split down the middle in English and Spanish on the page. So you don't need to click a button to say in Espanol or in English. And I felt like that was almost in recognition of a blind spot that the rest of us may have. So could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the biggest barriers to access in this county is communication problems. And we have navigated along the way. I mean, we started doing this, a lot of us had been involved in community organizing before and racial justice and social justice organizing, but we hadn't done this type of work, this particular type of work. And so we've learned a lot along the way. This has been a growing process. But one of the things that I knew from the beginning that would be incredibly important and that we've also had to expand upon in everything that we do is the communication, you know, issue. And so we have a sign-up section on our volunteer form for translators at our sites, and not just Spanish. There are many other languages also that we need. We need Haitian Creole. We need French. We need a lot of Mandarin, a lot of other languages.
All right, elevators, that are spoken. Listen up. If you've got the skills, bring them.
Absolutely. And we have had folks who have stepped up to the plate, have translated all of our signs, have anytime we put a notice out, we make sure it's in as many languages as we can make it. We are hopefully embarking on a new system, a new, you know, membership site, hopefully, where people can put their preferred language and we'll have somebody that can communicate with them only in that language. I've had to use, we have a large Burmese population. That I've noticed that I didn't even know about in the Ducats Lane area. And so I've had to use online translators that I, as a Spanish teacher, am like mortified that I have to use this online translator until I can find someone to help me translate. But, you know, making sure that our folks and our clients who are already feeling vulnerable and feeling all sorts of feelings about having to reach out for services and nervousness and scared, right? And finding themselves in these situations. And then on top of that, to feel like there's a communication problem is very scary. And so, you know, we were really intentional about making sure that we had the best ability for folks to feel like they could communicate, to feel like they were able to express their needs. Because really we're providing needs of a community. And we also need to know what the community needs. I mean, that's one of the major things. We've listened to what our clients are saying at our sites. If they say, do you have this particular item? And we don't, it may be something, you know, particularly cultural. It may be something that we didn't realize that certain populations use on a daily basis. And we've tried to fulfill those needs.
Do you have an example of that?
Sure. Maseca. Maseca is a particular item that in the very beginning we weren't providing.
And what is that?
But we soon must. So it's a cornmeal. And I should have known better because it's in my house all the time. But, you know, I should have known better. But Maseca is something that's used to make tortillas. And so it's a staple. And it's a bag of Maseca can sustain a family for a long time.
Oh, wow.
And so that's an example of an item that we realized was, you know, was needed. And then there are some, you know, other items that we've realized people don't really want. And so we want to make sure also that when folks go to our distribution sites, that not only can they communicate about what they need, they can communicate about anything that they're feeling or, you know, anything whatsoever, but that they also feel like they're shopping for what they would normally get at a store. We appreciate organizations. I think, you know, any level of service is beautiful. But, you know, when you have prepackaged boxes, you're assuming that people want what you're putting in the box. And yeah. I think that that's to some level, I don't want to say disrespectful because that's not really necessarily the right word, but I think it leads to valuing people's humanity and dignity when they are able to choose what they want, right? To have an experience like they are going to a store and to make sure that we're providing those items that they would find themselves at a store if they were able to go shopping for themselves at this point. So we want to provide an experience that is dignified, that is valued, that folks feel welcome. And part of that is, you know, is the communication piece, but most importantly, just loving our fellow beings and loving our human beings and seeing the humanity and the dignity of every single person that goes through our lines and uses our sites and uses our services. And I think that's super important too.
Yeah, I guess that it reminds me a little bit. I was talking to a friend recently. We're talking about charity and how charity is important, right? It is definitely important. It has its place. But one of the things I think that is more important and harder is justice. Like that is the tough part. And so I guess what I can see is that like this effort specifically evolved out of that pre-existing dedication to social justice. So I guess my question is why do you focus so much time on and this is before as well as now, right? Why focus so much time on a wealthy suburb like Howard County? And actually, I also want to clarify, I was calling it Columbia Community Cares, and I think it's not Columbia Community Cares. And I'm like, oh my God, I got it wrong. So I apologize for that.
That's okay. No worries. People say cares all the time. We do. Columbia Community does, you know, cares, but we also believe in community care. So both is okay. So why focus on a wealthy suburb? Because it's not a wealthy suburb for many of our families living here.
Yeah.
It is a struggle. It is a day-to-day battle. We have levels of poverty here that are, inexcusable and inexplicable. You just got to know it. You just got to see it. And this is my community. I love my community. I grew up here. I know what the struggles are. I know, you know, the community, the neighborhoods that, you know, a lot of my friends lived in. And I was really fortunate growing up to be comfortable. But, I went to Wild Lake, you know, like I'm a Wild Laker, like through and through, green and gold. And I know the communities. I know my students are right around me. I live here. So I know what it is. And it matters to me, and it should matter to everybody, because Howard County is by no means perfect. It's a beautiful place to live, right? Columbia is a beautiful place to live. I love Columbia. We have the best, brightest, most talented people right here in Columbia. It gets a terrible reputation. And I think being a Wild Laker, we were so used to having this negative reputation of, because we were the most quote diverse in the county. So we would always get this bad reputation of being the bad kids. And, you know, that comes from just disgusting racism and systemic racism and discrimination, and stereotyping and just ignorance. And it still does, it still gets, you know, that type of reputation, I think to a degree. But I think we spend every day proving everyone wrong. But why? Because we have families because it's our community and we should. And people are in need. And I care about my students more than anything in this world. I love them with all of my soul. I love their families. I see their beauty. I don't see their circumstance, but I recognize their circumstances. And that whenever my students are in trouble, whenever there's something going on, no matter what, a kid's head is down, they are acting out, quote unquote, there's something up. The first thing I ask them is, are you okay? And what do you need? And I mean that. And so when I say it, and I mean it, and I meant it when I said it, when the pandemic hit, I said, what do we need? And this is what we needed. And I think, you know, before I forget, and this might be a little off topic, but I think that one of the other things that has made Columbia Community Care so special and talking about the needs and talking about these issues is our Black and Brown Business Initiative, our Minority Business Initiative, which I think is such a beautiful part of this. And I really thank my program manager, McKenna Burns, for her organization of it. She just did such an incredible job just facilitating the whole thing. But we have been able to put our, our support towards Black and Brown owned restaurants, who could have very easily been you know, at this point, struggling to a point where they may have closed. And we have been able to see such a beautiful collaboration and partnership between Columbia Community Care and these particular restaurants, where we are purchasing meals from them every single week, making sure that they are staying afloat. And they are providing delicious, amazing, quality, healthy, beautiful food for our community. And so not only do our, you know, do our families come and pick up what they need in terms of, you know, household items and what they want to cook themselves, but they are also, you know, given the opportunity to eat delicious homemade, you know, cuisines from across the world that are made with love, and that are, you know, a representative of the diversity and richness that we see in this county. And I think that that has been such a beautiful thing as well. So I wanted to make sure that I highlighted those particular businesses.
So we, as we mentioned before, we have these shows on Facebook Live, and your show is, no surprise, one of our more popular ones. But I'm using that as a launching point to say that you are a leader and someone that people look to as a guidepost for where do we need to go next. So my question for you is, when you look at Howard County, and I'm going to get hyper local and you can take it as broad as you want, but okay, what laws do we need to be advocating for? What changes do we need to be advocating for locally? And then what should we be doing on the state level? Tell us, give us our orders on what we should be trying to fight for. And that can also be, what should we be trying to fund? Because we're in budget season right now, in the Howard County budget. I know it's a loaded question, but you did come on Elevate Maryland, and so we're known for patty cake questions, but not right now.
I hear you. Man, I'm going to get myself in trouble. So, I mean, the first thing, of course, I'm an educator. My number one answer is education funding. And that doesn't mean education funding that goes towards punitive education reforms or testing or technology for testing or anything like that. We need funding for restorative justice, for racial equity, to implement our policy 1080, to make it stronger, to make sure that we have enough staff so that our students are.
Yeah. Could I interject there? My question for you. Sure. So here's the concern that I think of when I think of the intersection of the county and the Board of Education, is that money is allocated there, but then there are certain members of the Board of Education that say, well, this money is going to go to this very vocal group of parents who want this money to go to this cause, as opposed to the causes that you regularly advocate for. So is there something that can be done that you've seen or would like to see to make it so that when we do have one of the most well-funded school systems in the country, that actually goes towards that, and maybe not gifted and talented, and maybe not, you know, the field trips to Gettysburg for the PTA that can raise $100,000 at a clip. I know that I don't expect you to have an answer, but it's something that I think of as a citizen, where it's like we can advocate for more funding going to the school system, but then it kind of goes into a big pool.
We need to have an equity budget, for sure. And we need to make sure that when we are saying things that we believe in, like equity, like restorative justice, that we're putting our money behind those things. We have to look at, so, you know, part of the problem is that a lot of times the loudest voices are the ones that have the largest population, and the voices that are always shut down are those that are the smaller population of our county, but are affected the most by harmful policies and practices and deserve to have the highest level of education possible. We have a school system that is great. I'm a teacher here. I love my school. I love my school system. I love my students. But we have serious inequities in our education system in Howard County. Serious inequities. If you want to look at segregation, all you need to do is go into a school building and look and peep in the rooms and see where, you know, what is happening in terms of who has access to higher level classes, how kids are being tracked in starting in elementary school, which students have access to extracurricular activities that end up giving them that extra boost to then, you know, have access to higher level opportunities, right? Like, we have serious inequities in this county. We have schools that are over-policed and we have schools that are not policed. We have schools that have tons of money for athletics and the PTAs are able to raise hundreds of thousands of dollars. And we have other schools that don't have that. And so we need to really address the inequities. We need a racial equity audit. We need to have an equity budget where we see exactly where the money is going to make sure that we're filling these gaps that I see as a teacher every single day in our school building.
And does this equity budget, because I just want to tell you, you're getting a lot of love, rightfully so, from our listeners. Does this equity budget need to originate in the Board of Education? Does it need to be something that the Board of Education decides for itself? Or are there steps that the county council could take? Now, I mean, I will tell you, based on my understanding of budgeting, that you can try to cordon off money from the county side, but it gets very messy. Has the Board of Education been approached with an equity budget? And if not, when are we doing that?
I mean, I believe that the subject has been broached before. I am almost positive that former board member Sabina Taj was fighting for an equity budget at one point. And I believe that Mavis Ellis, former board chair, was also supportive of that. That's as much as I know on that end. I think there's a three-prong approach. Actually, a four-prong approach. I think that it needs to come from the Board of Ed. Again, where you're when you say that you believe in certain ideals and values in a school system, your money needs to back that up, right? So I believe it should start at the Board of Ed. However, I am also fortunate and have the honor of being on the County Council's Racial Equity Task Force, and I'm on the Education Subcommittee, which allows us to take a look and do an analysis of the county, collect data. A lot of this data already exists, but kind of gather the data and then make recommendations to the county council, whether it be a bill or a budget, on what they can do to address inequities in our school system and around the county, right? Like, I'm on the education subcommittee. So although we have a lot of issues that are intertwined with other subgroups, you know, safety and, safety being one of them. And then I also believe, like, for example, the Howard County delegation to the Maryland General Assembly has some power in terms of what they can find and create, you know, pass legislation and create and find money to also fund certain things that are necessary here. I know that, you know, this is an example, and I know that this is a very controversial issue. But, you know, there was a bill by Delegate Atterbury, you know, trying to make it so that all schools in Howard County would have an adequate coverage plan for law enforcement, as opposed to an SRO in the building at every day, all the time. And there were some amendments made to make sure that money was included in that bill there was money found in order to then put it towards restorative justice, making sure that there was enough staff in the building, making sure that we are able to provide a truly safe atmosphere for all of our students that don't rely on armed police, right? And so on whatever, you know, I know that that's a very controversial issue. People have very strong feelings on both sides about police and about police in schools, but I'm giving an example of things that can be done on all levels. And then, of course, you know, the blueprint for Maryland's future, right? The Kerwin Commission, you know, that bill was we did a veto override, which is great, but that provides, you know, state level funding that is so necessary. And even the Safe to Learn Act, when it was passed at the time, provided certain amount of funding that was good, but also the money that was going towards certain things that were harmful should have been going to things that were more well-rounded for our students. And so, you know, these are issues that can be taken care of on all levels, state level, HOCO delegation to the Maryland General Assembly, the County Council, and the school board. So I believe it's all of those agencies have responsibility, and we as the people, right? These are our schools. This is our community. And we need to be fighting for the things that matter to us. We can't just sit back and let things happen. You know, we need to be vocal. We need to be engaged. We need to be involved. Even policy committees, right? Like, how HCPSS policy committees, you know, anytime there's an opportunity to have a revision of a policy or to create policy, I try to find somebody that I know would be a great representative voice, because it's one thing to write policy. Implementation is a whole other factor. And there's always going to be money attached to that. You can't just say you believe in something and then not have the funding. We have a diversity, equity, and inclusion office run by an amazing man, Kevin Gilbert, Dr. Kevin Gilbert. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in order for that department and that office to run in its top ability, and it needs money. They need money in order to do that. And our schools need to be staffed with, you know, we talk about class size, right? If we have one educator in a class of 33, 35 students, and I am trying my best, or we are trying our best to give individualized attention to each student, it's nearly impossible. We need to have the money so we can staff our buildings with folks who trained in de-escalation, who are restorative minded, who are restorative justice leaders, right? Who can help create safe and successful atmospheres for our students. We need folks that mental health workers. We need so many things in our schools that we don't have. And we have some schools that have everything that they need, and we have other schools that don't. And so I hope that answers your question. I hope I didn't piss too many people off.
I mean, honestly, you know, 'cause
I still love everybody.
The last time you came on the podcast, when we had the Look for the Helpers show, I loved how you made everyone uncomfortable. And I say that from my heart. Because like we had like, I'm not going to go back on over our guest list, because they're going to be like, I wasn't uncomfortable. I was fine with that. But like, this is why you are so important to the future of this county and this state. With that, I'll leave it to Annie to ask the next question.
It is a really great thing. I think you have done a very good job at being fearless and saying what needs to be said. And I think a lot of people do look to you for that guidance, which is great. And so I guess the other part of what I would ask is that, like I said, it's not just charity, it's justice as well. And when you're talking about the Board of Education earlier, I was thinking, you know, there are, we got to vote for people. And I think that's very important too. And having those candidates is important. So I guess I know this wasn't your intent, but you do seem to have a following. I don't know. I mean, it's clear why, right? What is next for you? Would you consider running for office?
No.
Oh man, because I was gonna ask.
I know. I'm sorry. I would love to. One of the things I think is most important for leadership is to bring up new leaders. As you cannot. Leadership doesn't mean you do everything and then that's the end of it, right? It means that you make sure that you are mentoring, that you're inspiring and encouraging folks to be on the journey with you, right? Who can take over, who can continue the fight and the struggle. And I look to our elders who have done that, and I respect our elders so much. And so you know, I think that hopefully, you know, it's a legacy, right, that you bring along with you, and you make sure that people are in the fight at all, you know, intergenerational. Mm-hmm. And so I say all that to say, I would love to mentor some folks and have them run. I don't believe that running for office is in my future. You are the millionth person that has asked me that question. I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to say that that, you know, anything is possible, but it's not something that's in the near future for me. I do have other plans in the near future, but that's not one of them.
Well, if I may just continue down that uncomfortable line, I think that the environment we have right now is toxic to good people running for office and is enabling to bad, self-serving people who don't care what anyone says about them to run for office. So without you talking about yourself too much, I would like you to say what you would like to see to have an environment where we have the opportunity to vote for someone like you, because we do have good elected officials in Howard County, but that's not a given. It's not a given that next cycle we're not going to be faced with bad choices. It's not a given that 5 years from now we might not have all bad choices. So what can citizens do to make sure that the civic environment is enticing you that you would want to run for public office? And that's a goofy ass question. So you could say, Tom, I'm not answering that stupid question, but I'm going to try anyway.
Man, I'm very rarely stumped.
It was a dumb question.
I think it all comes down to relationships. It comes down to relationships, and it comes down to, you know, if the person knows that the community has their back, that's the most important thing. It's not going to be a singular person running. It's going to be a community running, right? Like, we need the community behind our candidates that represent us, the real people of this community, not the elite, not the 1%. I will tell you that the most inspiring thing I have seen this entire year is the amount of youth, young folks that are brilliant. I think that people tend to, I'm losing the right word, but they tend to overlook or discredit young people and how bright they are and how powerful they are. And I have seen, it has given me the strength to keep going. The youth and our young folks who have stepped up to the plate, HOCO for Justice that led the march, and have done so much more beyond that, and are also college students trying to, you know, take a full load on, and who care deeply about their own community. Some of them are not even living in Howard County at the moment, but are still highly involved in what's happening here because they want to leave a better Howard County for their siblings and for the folks that are following them. And that's from their mouths. They're the ones that have said that to me. But the level of Black and brown, particularly Black and brown youth that have led the fight in this county this whole year, who have stepped up to the plate, even at Wild Lake, I got to give a shout out to my Wild Lake Students for Social Justice, who have done amazing work. They led an entire Black Lives Matter week of action. Just the young folks that are stepping up. I think that as long as we create a safe, supportive, loving, caring environment for them to show them that when you run for office, because there are going to be people, I mean, people come for me all the time. I got to have a shield. I mean, it's true. And that's okay. Because I know I got my community behind me. My family is behind me. I have people who are going to, you know, who love me unconditionally, who are there for me. I am so fortunate, and I thank them and I love them. Because I know that no matter what is spewed at me, no matter what is thrown at me, no matter how many times that people try to throw me under the bus or whatever's going to happen, I know that the people that I care about most are standing behind me and will catch me before I fall, right? And so we need to make sure that we are creating that loving, safe, supportive community and environment for folks who are willing to step up to the plate, to have the courage to run, because it is scary. And people, I know that so many candidates have been attacked, there, you know, even at their homes, you know, and it's terrifying. It can be very scary. What will come out? What will happen? But as long as folks who are willing to put themselves on the line and run and have the courage to do so, know that their community is behind them 100%. I think that's how we do it. That's how we get it done. And we got to find I think we tend to overlook folks who may not be the perfect candidate on paper, what we think of a candidate, but who have the heart, the soul, the knowledge. I look at, Samira Rice, Tamir Rice's mother. Who took an absolute outrageous, brutal murder of her baby and turned it into, I'm going to fight to the death for my son and for justice, and took it upon herself to run. We need to find folks who have authentic, real experiences and have them be the voice of the folks making decisions. I'm looking right now at Delegate Acevero in the Maryland General Assembly, who has just led the charge in so many ways. Delegate Wilkins, so many people who are just the real deal. From Baltimore.
Ori McCray. He's a senator now.
No, Jill Carter. Jill Carter.
Oh yes.
Oh my goodness. Those are the folks that inspire me because they are from the community. They have not been politicians their whole lives. They are real folks who care about issues that matter most to them and who make huge impact.
You will, even if you are not running, which I heard a little equivocation, so maybe it's not done. but even if you're not
running, I think your mic is broken.
Even if you are not running, you will use your leadership position to communicate in the same way you are now about people that you would like to see succeed in local office.
Absolutely, for sure. And I will try to encourage people to run too, even though I feel contradictory and terrible that I'm saying all these things and I'm like, but I will.
That's kind of like what a conversation show is about. You just talk yourself in a circle and you come back and push your own button.
And then eventually maybe you say yes, who knows?
I don't know. We'll see how the next couple of years go and if the goals that I have for my community and our community come to fruition.
What we need is an Erica's list. That's what we need.
Yeah, I like that.
We'll do an Erica's pipeline of people and then we'll do Erica's list. How about that?
Sounds great. They're going to be all my students, so be ready.
That's amazing. That would be great. I'll talk to you after the show.
Okay.
Let's go into our same old questions. Annie, since you're new at this, I'll start because I normally ask this one. Erica, last time your books were like powerful cannons shot across the bow. Like you, everybody was like, I read Gilead. And you were like, I read this book. So what was the last book, movie, or music recommendation you made to a friend or family member?
So believe it or not, I came prepared with my book in hand.
You did last time too.
I did. And I'm doing it again. The Isis Papers by Dr. Frances Cress Welsing.
All right.
She is mind-blowingly brilliant. If you've never heard of her or read her, I recommend this book. She has many more. This is a book basically explaining the history behind white supremacy. And it is, if you look, just Google her and watch her on YouTube. And also read her books, and you will find yourself immersed in.
And to be clear, for the uninitiated, she is not in any way writing about ISIS, like ISIS.
No.
I know. I'm just saying some people like have mental constructs, and they're like, terrorism.
No, it is not. It is not about ISIS in what people think of. And actually, she explains why she chose the word ISIS.
Yeah.
Yes, no, it has nothing to do with that. It is her analysis of the history of white supremacy, dating back to colonialism, globalism. So you'll see, it's incredible if you read it. She is. Yeah, I have no words to say how much I appreciate her as a human being, and as a activist, as a thinker, as a everything.
Cool. So and music and movie.
Music and movie. Oh my gosh. I should have prepared myself better for these.
You're like, I'm going to drop knowledge, but.
I know. And then I get stumped. This is the second time you've stumped me tonight, Tom. All right. So music is on my playlist. I love Lupe Fiasco, anything Lupe. So
is he still putting out music? Because I love Lupe too.
Absolutely. Black Thought, Lupe.
All right.
That's my go-to. On my workout playlist is always Lupe and Black Thought for sure.
And then a movie.
I did see what was it called?
Black Judas?
Yes, Judas and the Black Messiah.
Yeah, there we go.
I did see Judas and the Black Messiah recently. It is excruciating and everything that many people already knew. But I think that I did have some critiques, but I think overall it was for folks who are maybe not so aware of the history of COINTELPRO and the FBI and CIA's involvement in the destruction of many power groups. I think it was an eye opener. But I thought it was well done. I did have some critiques. I always have some critiques, but it was good.
Just real quick, I don't pay attention to award season, but. That movie had some of the best acting I've seen in probably 5 or 6 years. Was it nominated for any awards? Does anyone know?
I don't watch any of the shows. I'm sorry.
I don't know. I'm the worst at that. I'm sorry. I can't.
For whatever reason, I thought you might be into the award show circuit. I guess that's not your
thing. Me?
No, Anne.
Wait, which one of us?
Oh,
really?
I don't consider that to be offensive, but I don't know. I thought you were like in with the hip stuff.
No. I mean, you asked me what latest Atlantic article was written. I can probably give you that.
Okay. So you're saying my question suggested you were vapid. I did not mean that at all. That was not my intent.
Now, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to go check now because that curiosity is now going to go. I'm like, did they? They should have gotten an award.
I guarantee you they didn't.
I confuse all the awards. I don't know what each of them is. I think an Academy is a Grammy. I don't know any of these things. I'm terrible.
Let's move on. Annie, you got the next question?
Yeah. What's the most unpopular, benign opinion that you hold?
And I remember the joke I made last time, so I'm going to make it again. I bet you don't have any benign opinions.
I don't. But winter sucks. And avocados are the most delicious food on the
planet. I thought you were going to say avocados are gross, because that would be an unpopular, benign opinion.
No, they're amazing.
Here's an in-between one that you probably wouldn't agree with, but I'm going to offer it anyway. Don't eat avocados in winter.
I eat avocados every day of the year, if I could.
Eating avocados in winter is bad for the environment because it takes a lot of carbon to get it from wherever it's grown to where you are. But
I'm sorry, environment. I love you, but I love my avocados more. I actually was ceremonially named Avocado Baby by very close friends we had when I lived in New Mexico. When I was born in New Mexico. And our very close Navajo friends actually named me Avocado Baby and did a ceremony with an official naming, because the only thing I would eat as a kid was mashed up avocados. My mother struggled with me a lot, and that was the only thing that she could get me to eat was avocados. So I have a love and obsession with avocados.
From birth.
Erica, what podcast are you listening to?
My friend Gabe Tanglao is doing one called Continental Shift. He is a Filipino brother out of New Jersey, and it is about addressing anti-Blackness in the Asian culture trying to combat it with some Filipino power, and it is amazing, and I am really, really proud
of it. That's cool.
Wow, that's amazing. So it's anti-Blackness, not like colorism. It's specifically anti-Blackness.
Yes, and also uplifting Pacific Islander and Asian community in fighting for Black liberation and being co-conspirators in the struggle.
And what was that called again?
It's called Continental Shift.
Continental Shift. Good.
Yeah. It's a good one. And Tori Smith's podcast. I got to shout him out. I like to watch Tori Smith's podcasts. He invited me on it, and since then I've been a fan.
All right.
I follow his Twitter account. He's pretty amazing. He's pretty impressive.
He is.
I love reading all the stuff. I mean, he does the football stuff, and I'm like, not so much. But the rest of it's really good. So
yeah, he's a good guy, and he's a Howard Countyan. So
yeah, fantastic.
I just don't like when he responds to ne'er-do-wells like Chris Oxenham on Twitter. But nevertheless,
oh, it's beautiful.
Can't be all great.
going back to Chef's Kiss, best meal in Howard County. What do you think is the best meal in Howard County?
Oh, goodness. I am a foodie and I love all meals. The best meal in Howard County is my husband's anything.
No, Erica. Now I know you don't listen to our podcast and it hurts my feelings. The rule is that it can't be something that you get at home. It has to be.
Okay. I love, and I may be pronouncing it wrong, but Tiki's Ethiopian on Route 40.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Tiki's.
Yeah. And I got to give a shout out to all my Common Kitchen people.
All right.
So anything from Common Kitchen is a go for me. And also my Ethiopian spot is delicious.
TG's is one of the most underappreciated food resources we have in Howard County, next to pretty much the entirety of the Korean food scene on Route 40. But yes.
Agreed.
Thank you for shouting out TG's, because I love them.
For sure.
So the last question, and the one that we end all of our shows with, is what do we all need to do to elevate Maryland?
We need to make sure that if we believe in true equity, that we are, and you say that you are for racial equity and Black Lives Matter, that if you are not a group that is susceptible or that is most affected by injustice, but you say that you support, that means that you support the means by which those groups are fighting for justice and what justice means to them. Mm. And I think that is how we uplift and elevate Maryland.
I love that. Well, thank you so much, Erica. As I've said before, it would only be a privilege for the folks at Howard County to get a chance to vote for you because, I joke about that. That's the Howard County compliment. I mean, I tell that to a lot of people. Like the Howard County compliment is you should run for something. And everybody's like, you know, a lot of people told me I should run for county executive or whatever the hell it is. Like you are the type of person that should be, well, not should be, because that's not fair to say. We would be privileged enough to have someone like you serve in public office because you have touched and interacted with the people that need the help of government the most. And Howard County, the reason I love doing what I do as a land use and zoning attorney is that I get the chance to give opportunity to other people to come here. And what you do is you help the people that are excluded from Howard County's quality of life. And so I hope that we can continue to work together to make more people have access to that. And I'm so thankful I live in a place that has someone like you here. So thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I will say that if you want to support the work that we're doing for Columbia Community Care, that our next venture and we're creeping towards our goal is to open a Columbia Community Care Peace and Justice Center, where we will not only continue the work of Columbia Community Care, but expand upon all of the needs, the human needs from, you know, wrap around all of the needs that we have in our community in a brick and mortar space. And try to flip the narrative of what Howard County looks like in terms of ownership. And so we would appreciate, you know, support for that. So if you're interested, we do have a Facebook page, Columbia Community Care Peace and Justice Center. There is a petition to sign. We're really excited about it. We hope that it'll be the most game changing venture in this county so far. So hopefully that'll, you know, replace me running for office. Thank you.
What pieces are left of that? Just out of curiosity, are you doing the petition, and then where are you with the Peace and Justice Center?
We have various levels of partnerships. So we are trying to make sure that we're solidifying partnerships with community organizations, that we're getting support through the petition, also through, you know, Howard County organizations, that we're going to get county support, hopefully. We, you know, need the funds, we need investors, we need public-private partnerships, we need a whole bunch of things, but we are, we're, you know, applying for grants. We do have a space that we have picked out, which I can't disclose yet, but it is, you know, in the heart of Columbia, and we would really love to see this opportunity for all of our community members. It would be an intergenerational space where we have our elders and our youngest of minds coming together for some beautiful knowledge sharing, and just a place of healing, a place of joy, a place of justice, where we look at all of the needs of our county as educators. You know, many of us are educators. That is the first thing I think of, is the education that needs to be done and the things that we need to provide for our community that they don't have access to right now. So we're really excited about it. It's been a dream of mine for a long time. And for the people that I work with, we've had this separate dream that is kind of coming together in this one venture. So, we're praying.
So more information on Facebook. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And we'll link to it. And I am confident that that will happen. And Erica, to the extent anything that I have available to me would be helpful to you, please let me know. We can connect.
I'm sure will. Thank you.
And Erica, I promised you that we were going to let you go a couple minutes ago. So we're going to go into our three things. So you are welcome to sign off. But thank you so much for coming on to the show. Thank you. All right, Annie. So we are now going to turn to our three things, the three things that have been off and on with Candace and I, three action items, I think we're just going to go into like three things we're going to talk about today. So the first one's going to be my thing, and that's going to be the Columbia Association and Village elections. So for the first time ever, we have this entity, the Rouse Project. It's been provided both praise and criticism. But above it all, it has raised the profile of these very important elections. I had the opportunity to serve on the Columbia Association Board of Directors for 3 years. At the time I was a board member, it was a $63 million organization. At the time I was a board member, we were on Fox News and Rush Limbaugh for providing time for women to swim by themselves in accordance with religious dictates. It is a very important organization. As a matter of fact, Pat Kennedy, when he was the first president of the Columbia Association, ended up making childcare a fundamental focus of the Columbia Association because he wanted to provide more work equity in Columbia homes. He wanted to make it so that children, because at that time, and listen, it persists to this day, we can say all we want that children are a dual responsibility of both husband and wife, but childcare ends up falling on the wife. He said, we need to increase childcare opportunities so women have the opportunity to live their careers, live their passion, and go out and do that. It is an important organization. And for everyone who is criticizing the Rouse Project, you must accept this and own the status quo. If the status quo is fine with you, then sure, attack the Rouse Project. Attack everyone that's going to run. But the status quo is a majority white male, older white male board in one of our most diverse parts of our county in Columbia. And so what I would say to all that is look at who's running, vote. If you live in Columbia, vote. Research who you're going to vote for. Don't just take it from the Rouse Project. Don't just take it from whatever Facebook page. But this is a really important election that a lot of social good has been created from this organization, and a lot of social good is yet to retained by this organization. Yeah. And so I just had to go on that rant because, listen, when I served on the board, I was 28 years old. I was really young, but I gave it a lot of time. I probably gave it during that year over 120 hours in per year to that organization, which it's not too much, but it's not too little. People should care. And all this agita about the Rouse Project, sure, critique it, scrutinize it, particularly for your own vote. But they're up trying to upset the status quo, and the status quo sucks.
No, and I think you have a great point. I mean, in general, I think maybe I've heard of the CA elections, and granted, I live in Ellicott City, so I don't really hear about it much anyway. But it's a Columbia thing. I hear about it here and there. I do hear about some of the toxic members on some of the boards last year, some of the village boards. And I was shocked. I mean, just absolutely shocked. It was one of these things where you're like, how are these people representing others? It was frightening. And so I think with this pandemic, with the change, we've seen that there not only do we need a change in Columbia, but we need people to vote, right? Like that's important. Just talking about it, they have raised, I think the Rouse Project has raised enough interest where I got a question. I was talking about it to somebody today, and I got a question. Then they were like, you know, they were talking about how the Rouse Project had a mailer, and now I want to see the mailer. Like, where's the mailer? I want to see the mailer, and I want to know what the issues are because I don't know what the issues are. I have never seen those issues before. I didn't realize there were issues, and so that by itself, I think, is pretty impressive. So I'm with you on this. I think that they have done a really good job of just lifting those ideas and those thoughts and those issues to a place where people are actually care and they do want to vote.
Yeah. And one more point on that, and because you brought up the mailer, there's been a lot of sort of like, well, who's funding this thing? And I don't think that gives enough credit to voters because Howard County voters, I always point this out, that Howard County was one of the only jurisdictions that voted against expanded gambling in Maryland. And you can have different opinions about gambling in Maryland, but Money was thrown at expanded gambling in Maryland, but Howard County was the only jurisdiction that voted against it originally, not this past time. And I think that what that tells you is that Howard County voters are discerning voters. And anyway, I'm going to leave it at that, other than to say that this is an important election. Pay attention to it. If more people vote in it, that is good. End of story. Why they voted in it doesn't matter.
Right, right. Exactly. Do your research and vote. That's the important thing, yes. I think, more than anything else. You're right.
Am I going again, or are you going?
I'm going to go. I'm going to go. That's okay. Actually, you know what? I'll let you go first, because mine's more fun.
So I'll go twice. The second one is, and this is really important to me, there are housing bills in Annapolis that could fundamentally change how rental housing is done in Maryland. One of which is a right to counsel for those making 50% of AMI or less. Mm-hmm. I was disgusted when I reviewed the fiscal note for this bill. And it's part of my testimony before the House Judiciary Committee, where one of the increased costs of this bill is that less default judgments will be entered against people that don't show up for court.
Wait. I need you to explain that. First, AMI, I need you to explain this.
So 50% of AMI, so average median income, that for the state of Maryland, I believe that would probably be $50,000 or less.
Okay.
And default judgment means you go to court, you say they are in default of their lease, meaning they haven't paid rent or have done something else wrong. In some cases, if you've read the book Eviction, it's because your son knocks down a door and the landlord has to repair it. And he doesn't tell you, but he says that that's a breach of the lease. And so he files an eviction on you. I mean, the grounds of, and here's where it gets really malicious, is when an area starts to gentrify, evictions pick up, because they say, if I could just get rid of this lease, I can lease this for 50% more than what I'm getting right now.
Gotcha.
And so these people are losing their homes. Like, for those of us that live in Howard County, not most of us, most of us that talk to one another, I'd say in these circles might say, well, we've got a large population of homeowners, but it still is about 50-50 in terms of renters and homeowners. But homeowners are vulnerable to eviction, and especially vulnerable for homelessness are those that are making 50% AMI or less. So a right to counsel. And as I also said during my testimony, a lawyer, counting myself as one of them, we don't have magic powers. So if it is a meritorious eviction, that eviction is still going to go through. But at the very least, we deserve to have the laws that are made to protect renters implemented and protected. And so it's a very important piece of legislation. It has been referred out of the Judiciary Committee, and it is now on the House floor. And Senator Shelley Hettleman has sponsored her bill in the Senate, and I believe it has been referred out of committee there. I'm just very excited about the possibility that this might pass. So I hope that everyone in Howard County will make sure we have 100% voting record with the delegation supporting this right to counsel, because it sounds radical. Sounds like you're changing things, but 50% of AMI. Here's the sad thing, folks. The sad thing is that the effect of this bill in Howard County will be next to nothing, because people that make 50% of AMI can't live here. But for most of the state, it would be really big. And so I just want to give a push for it, and hope you all will see your way to sending that email over to your legislator. And you know what I should have done, and I'm going to look this up while we're talking. I should have found the bill. I'm going to listen to you, Annie, as I am looking this up to make sure everybody knows the right bill.
Sure. Actually, while you're looking that up, I will let you know that I have some very good friends who do listen and know more about awards. And Judas and the Black Messiah, it is nominated for Best Picture, and two of the actors are up for Best Supporting
Actor. Oh, thank you very much for doing that.
So that's really good. I've got phone of friends. I've got really good friends.
Good.
And let me think. So I'm gonna do mine. I was able to over winter break. I grew up where it's cold. Everybody learns how to ice skate there. I did not. That was one thing that I missed out on. Like, my sister did great with that, but I never did. But I went ice skating with my kids in the Meriwether district, and it was beautiful. It was so nice. It was, and there was like, there were little kids whizzing around me. I mean, they were fantastic. It was really nice. And then last week, the Charmery opened.
Yes.
And it's this new ice cream place that I know there's one in Baltimore, but this one opened in Columbia. It is fantastic. I was able to get, so I have a source. My kid works there. So I have a source.
I actually think I might have been served my ice cream from your daughter.
It's possible. She's a little on the shorter side. So she was saying that it was difficult for her to get her arm
now
in there.
I'm 100% sure that I was served by your daughter.
And she looks a lot like me. Yes. So very, very possible. But yeah, no, she brought some home for me. I was able to get a taste of a few different flavors. There was a Thai tea ice cream. Oh my God. Amazing. Just amazing.
Wow. I wasn't even that fancy. I had the vanilla malt chocolate chip, which was also very awesome.
Yeah, that sounds good. That sounds really good. I want to go through all the flavors, but it's so many flavors. That's the only issue, but I know I can do it. I'm going to set my mind to it. I'm just going to do it because I can. So I will.
Yeah, so a small aside on that is that I was there for that opening night, and I sat on a bench, and I like, there's placemaking at work there. And there's a lot of people that are upset that people have paved Symphony Woods, which they didn't. Like, Symphony Woods is still there. This was land that was already lined up for development. But like, it is really cool to see like the dynamics that are developing there with, you know, Busboys and Poets that is going to be right there. Rainbow Park, like the Charmery. When I was looking at the Charmery, I could imagine the line of like kids and families like lining up for ice cream. Like, this is the, I'm just going to be frank, this is the exciting part of good development.
Yes.
Good development, not the ice cream scoop of a house on a tenth of an acre. That's bad development.
Yeah.
But good development that has commercial and residential all mixed together that makes a place, that is what I felt there. And so I'm really excited about what's going to happen there. We have promises, half promises and full promises, that Elevate Maryland is going to have space at Busboys and Poets. It's going to be great. And the ice cream is very good. And I did find my legislation reference, which is Senate Bill 154 and House Bill 18. So Senate Bill 154, House Bill 18, please let your legislators know that you support that bill. And as our friend Tina reminded me on the Facebook Live, it is area median income, not average median income.
Oh, gotcha. Area.
I've had quite a day. And I'm talking too fast, but Annie,
I said Columbia Community Cares today about three times. So we're just going to have to call it a day.
Well, thank you so much for co-hosting, and you are always a great co-host here. And Erica was fantastic as always. And let's hope that everybody didn't mind doing the Zencaster thing. I know I got a note that it crashed while we were recording, but I also got a bunch of comments. So maybe it only crashed for a few people. But have a great night, everyone. Thank you for listening, and see you again in a couple weeks.
Bye, guys.